What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome back to, oh my gosh, this is the last episode of the year. This is our final episode of 2022. And y'all know I could not end the year without bringing back my friend and a friend of the podcast, playwright, theater critic, journalist, Kalundra Smith is in the living room with us, y'all. Woo, woo, woo! Y'all. Listen, okay, I invited Kalundra the first time because I just think that you're brilliant and we love talking TV and art and stage things together. And then the second year, because this is our third year now, I think, yes. Right? Okay, so the second year I was like, that was fun. I'm going to ask Kalundra again. And I really hadn't decided what I was doing towards the end of the year this year. And then Desus and Miro... had happened, and Kalundra and I were tweeting to one another because I was like, I was probably finna ask Kalundra anyways, but now we have to come together during these difficult cultural times. So I want to open up the episode right here. We're going to be talking about some of the best, maybe worst, but mostly best TV things from 2022. Mm-hmm. But I got to begin with an ode to Desus and Miro because, I mean, how are you faring with the way things ended?
I'm not faring well at all. I'm not okay. I just want to be vulnerable and share that I'm not okay because I just don't know. They made us have to get through an election cycle without Desus and Miro, which just feels disrespectful.
It do.
And
it do.
And then it's like, who is going to like actively take down Hotep Twitter and Instagram now? You know what I mean? Like, it feels like.
And really, you know, not to be really inappropriate in our conversation, Kalundra, but also who is going to inappropriately mention anal sex as many times in a television show as Miro did? Like...
Susio boys.
Wow.
I mean, but let me tell you how you know a show has had such a vast cultural impact. I saw people of all ages, races, you name it, coming up with conspiracy theories as to what may have happened that made Desus and Meryl go away.
I ain't gonna lie, they sent me down a Reddit thread because I was trying to figure out, on a money level, I was trying to figure out how y'all mess up y'all money like this. Because something like, if two friends, you know, like say if they was Amina and Kalundra late night show, it's like on the very basis that me and you getting money, and if you getting Showtime money, it's like you get better money than a lot of other money situations. Even if we don't rock, I feel like we need to sit down and have a meeting and be like, how long are we gonna act like we rock?
Right.
So we can get this money.
I would fake the funk with you forever.
Like, listen, I don't understand that. I don't get it. I was like, some gotta be bad for y'all to ruin y'all's bags over this. Like,
but like, do you think it was, see, we're now conspiracy theorying, well, because this is what happened. It also sent me to following producers on Twitter to figure out what happened.
Shout out to Josh. In heaven, okay. I'm out here too. Like, maybe they.
I was like, Julia, what's going on?
Where you at, Julia? Explain it.
So I was like, is it that there's something personal between them, or is it the network? Mm. Like, was the network putting pressure on them to reformat the show in a certain way, and that didn't feel true to them, and so they had creative differences? And you know, they've left us with so many unanswered questions, and I guess I'm gonna have to just find a chopped cheese to comfort myself. I don't know.
I mean, and the way it left us so abruptly, I still can't get over that. I'm like, whatever beef happened, it wasn't like we was at the end of a season. Was it the end of a season, Kalundra? And it just feel like it wasn't.
It felt like they were about to go on a break, but not the end of a season. Mm, mm-hmm. And then they were basically like, we ain't coming back from break. This is going to be the last episode. And I was like, did the Rihanna baby shower do it? Like, I just don't know.
What are the vibes like? And I'm sorry for those of y'all that are like, what is y'all talking about? Desus and Meryl is a late night show. And listen, if you have never watched Desus and Meryl, just go back. I know it's going to hurt your feelings when you get to the end and you realize it ain't no more. But go on and go back and watch this, because Desus and Meryl have had their podcast together, the Bodega Boys, which parlayed into a deal with Vice, where they were initially a show on Vice and then this late night show on Showtime, which some seasons was once a week and then some seasons it was twice a week. I wish it would have been every day, to be honest. It was one of the most unique late night show formats, number one. And number two, we know that late night historically has just been very white. Mm-hmm. So to have these two men of color here giving their very New York perspective, it was such a unique thing. Like, the segments, I feel
and emotional. They had a New York Times best-selling book called God Level Knowledge Darts. Mm-hmm.
Got a copy.
You know, because the whole thing is that they met as teenagers growing up in the Bronx. Desus is the child of Jamaican immigrants. Meryl is the child of Dominican immigrants. They meet in high school. Years later, they are reunited. They start just kind of doing these riffs and commentary about life and culture in the Bronx. But then what happens is that they so brilliantly made the Bronx a microcosm of America. And where we really get, you know, the excellence of Desus and Meryl to me was in the pandemic.
Yes.
When they had the little ticker tape that would go across the beginning of every episode with like commentary about what was going on. It is worth your while to go back and just read the little ticker tape that they did across those Zoom episodes, because somebody was writing comedic brilliance. Mm-hmm. Also, they did their own verses as if it was like Beethoven versus Mozart. And that was like utter and complete foolishness that like was so delightful. And then on top of that, Z-Way, who has this show on Showtime as well, was a writer on Desus and Meryl. So I'm just like, How did this happen? I'm still clearly mm-mm. distressed. Mm-mm. I'm distressed.
Very much. Like it feels like a gap. It was always a gap in my life when they would be like, we going on a break, or it would be like, oh, the season's over. And I would really be like disappointed. And then the one season when they went from two episodes a week down to one, I was like, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do that other night? Like, it's a whole week of stuff going by. Like, what I'm gonna miss out on that. I appreciated about this show the characters that were very much Bronx centric. The mm-hmm. one man that would always say, take it ease.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember his name right now. Oh my gosh.
I feel like it was Joey or something.
Oh my gosh. And then this anchor man.
No, it was Good Time Tommy. Good Time Tommy.
Yes, that's it. It was Tommy. He would be on there doing, we do it old school. Oh my gosh. Like, just that, this anchor man that they were just so obsessed with.
Maurice Dubois
on the news. I don't even watch the news in the Bronx. And I'm just like, shout out to Maurice. Like, the interview that they did with David Letterman and great. The way that I was like, there's a few moments that happen in your life that I'm like, if that happens to you and nothing else happens to you, like, you're all right. Like, you good. Like, as two late night hosts, David Letterman looking at them and being like, this is the future right here. This the future. Mm-hmm. This is what late night is supposed to be. David Letterman? I would have been like, you really can't tell me anything about my life. Like, David Letterman basically looked at us and told us we geniuses. The interview they did with Barack Obama, with President Barack Obama, still to this day, is yes. one of the most wild things. AOC, that interview, when AOC came around the corner talking about Europe, I was like, oh my God.
And then made them drinks at the bar she used to work at. Listen. And it was just like, what is happening here? And that is truly the essence of that show. It was like they would go find the wildest stuff that nobody else was talking about, or they would get on the streets and they would talk to the people and get the real perspective about like what was happening. And that's the thing. No one else is truly like centering working class people of color in anything.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what they did. And they didn't talk down to their audience. They were like, no, these are people who like have real opinions. What they feel and think matters. Like, this is America. And I don't know. And then we're losing Trevor Noah on The Daily Show. Ugh. So like, it's just the whiteout. I don't know.
What are we supposed to do now? I just want to just hand to heart, want to give a shout out to Deezus and Mero. Obviously, y'all listen to the podcast.
Obviously.
And I don't know what the beef was. I don't know the details. I tried to read as much as I could read, and I still don't know if it was the truth. It's like, I really, on the one hand, I want both of y'all to thrive, but I hope one day y'all could squash this beef and selfishly come back on television. But even if you don't come back on television, I hope y'all squash this beef, because this was a friendship mm-hmm. before it became a thing that we got to consume, and y'all really like revolutionized something in television. And if y'all can't come back and do it, I hope y'all lay some groundwork that some other voices that are picking up on people who are being left out of the late night conversation can happen. But Deezus and Mero, y'all are missed. I don't know, Kalendra. I still feel my feelings about this one.
Oh, same. Like, I often on Sundays, Susio Sunday.
Okay, Susio Sunday.
And yours day.
Come you know, on, yours day.
I don't know. It's a hole for me, and no one has filled it, and it makes me sad. And I don't know. There's no closure here.
Mm-hmm. That's it. It's kind of like I still follow both of them, and seeing them do things separately, like, it make my heart ache a little bit. I'll be like,
oh. Yes, the friendship to me has to survive.
Yeah.
I could be okay with the show ending if the friendship survives.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I don't have the show or the friendship,
yikes.
I'm like,
no. No.
Well, wait.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of like an Andre 3000 moment. You know, it's like, I would love for Andre 3000 to be out here just making a gang of music and performing and touring all over the place. However, it seems that Andre 3000 has a happier life when he just play his flute in the airport and just meet up with random people at a coffee shop someplace. So do I want his music? Yes. I would prefer a healthy Andre 3000. And if a healthy Andre 3000 just played a flute some places and he don't never make another record, then I'll settle for that. And that is totally, I feel the same way about Desus and Mero. It's like, would I love to see y'all at some point, like, come back together and figure some things out and redo some things? I would love to see it. But more than that, I would just love a little picture of y'all's Timberlands together so that we know y'all all right. Y'all good with each other.
Weren't they supposed to have a line of Timbs? What happened?
They did. It was, everything was short-lived. Everything. Kalandra, I'm moving on because I'm not going to be crying. But just know, Desus, Mero, y'all listening, we miss y'all. Okay. Let's talk about some happy news. I want to get involved in Best Sitcom of 2022, Kalandra.
Oh, tell me. We know what the best sitcom
is. I mean, are we drumroll? Is it not Abbott Elementary?
I mean, I don't know what the other option would be.
Look,
Quinta came in and was like, I'm going to take the most basic thing that everybody in America does and like milk it for as much content as possible. And she can literally, as far as I'm concerned, just get renewed for the next 15 seasons.
Big facts. Big super like, facts.
I'm in. I'm sold. I'm hooked. I'm there.
I mean, because, okay, if I bring the Office into the chat, which to me is the last TV show that I remember watching as an adult and at some point being like, this is going to be a classic. But I feel like The Office was way more seasons in before that thought was coming to me. Like if I, like when I go back and rewatch The Office now, I'm like, dang, this was kind of amazing from the beginning. But from the beginning, I was kind of like, man, they really just going to do this show about people working in the office? Like, I don't know. It was like season 2, season 3 before I was like, say what? We got to make sure we home when the office come on. Like, I didn't feel like that right away. Abbott Elementary really, off of episode 1, had me like, yes, okay, we're Wednesdays, we're Thursday, it's Tuesday. What day we doing? Because yes, like immediately Quinta had me like, oh my gosh, the ensemble, the teachers, the yes, she had me right away.
Well, and she sucked millennials in because she got Jesse from The Parent Trap, who we loved with Lindsay Lohan. And what's his name? Jesse Tyler. Is it Williams?
Yes. Yes.
Chris got him. And then you got D from Moesha. And like, she basically went and got our faves and like was like, here's a workplace comedy that is going to very smartly dissect like the issues with public school systems in America, but in a way that is lighthearted,
yes,
that's funny. And we're going to center the most poorly dressed, awkward Black girl possible as our protagonist. And she's going to have a boyfriend that is like a YouTube rapper.
Is like utterly useless. She has the most useless man. If she was my friend, I would be like, you know the skit that Janet Jackson did before What Have You Done For Me Lately? Where her girls were talking to her and her girls was like, but what has he done for you lately? Like, I would literally be like that to Janine's like character. I'd be like, Janine, what do he do besides Millie Rock? What do he do for you?
Nothing. Tariq is got to be. And the thing is, we didn't know this about Tariq from the beginning. And that's part of the brilliance of the show. Mm-hmm. When we meet Tariq, there's this outcry from the audience of like, oh no, Janine's boyfriend is awful.
He's trash. He's trash.
Like, we weren't ready.
Like, she got to be a teacher on a budget. She got to deal with all this bureaucracy and all the terrible things going on that's making teachers' jobs hard. And her boyfriend, she basically like supporting him. He don't really do nothing for her. Ooh, child. I want to thank Abbott Elementary for this low simmer of chemistry between Janine and Gregory. Am I making that up? That's not his name. That is his name, Gregory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The chemistry between the two of them at work, it is giving me what I loved about Jim and Pam. It is giving me the slow burn that made me just stick in there for The Office. Because really, it's like after a while, I was like, oh, snap, The Office is really about these two people. Like, I thought this was a comedy about the people working in this corporate office, but it's really about these two people, like, falling in love. Will they, won't they? I love the way Quinta is giving us these little moments of simmer. But we are now in our second season and these two people are still not together. And I'm going to watch it, Calundra. I'm going to watch until they finally, they got the kiss. We got to do something. We need something.
But you know what? She's built the characters in such a way that she can drag this out, because Gregory is an oddball who hates food.
He does hate food! When he was in the car hiding his little boring sandwiches he was eating, I cannot. I can't.
And then, like, Janine is, like, socially awkward and oblivious to things, but also, like, super, like, bouncy and all over the place.
Eternal optimist, even in the most, like, not optimistic circumstances. Yes.
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 And then, shout out to Janelle James, who made like the world's worst principal, the most endearing character.
Yes. It's like, it's almost like it's not even a love to hate, because I don't hate her. It's just like her ability to choose to be inept fascinates me. Because it's not like baby's not smart. It's not like baby can't understand the vibes of the job. It's her choice to be like, it's TikTok for me and not y'all jobs and what y'all need from me as a boss. It's not that. I'm choosing my TikTok hustle over y'all. That's wild.
And they're setting us up for the utter and complete hot mess that will be the moment where Gregory chooses Janine and not Ava.
Ooh, she is going to be wrecked. She is going to be like, you choosing this girl who can't even match a sweater with her skirt? Like, you really... Like, you really choosing her over all this badass bitch? Like, really?
It's her. Janine is giving Laura Ingalls Wilder every single.
Janine is somehow giving, like, if there was a rainbow or dots version of Anthropology the store, that is what Janine's character is giving us. And I've never seen that combination until I looked at her like, wow, this is, wow. Well, I don't even know what it would be called. Like, it's going to, you know what it's going to be called? She's giving us sociology, but it's like GEE. That's the store. It's like rainbow, dots, shoe warehouse, sociology.
Not cottage core for the broke.
Okay. Okay. I was like, baby is matching these florals with these pastels and stripes. I just...
And she's like 4'10", and the colors don't coordinate. The clothes are wearing her. It's a mess. Mm-mm. It's a mess. And then, of course, we have, Melissa, who is always in leather leggings. It's like, how are you like a mob boss teaching second grade in leather leggings?
Okay. Okay. I was like, wait a minute. And I need to give, I wish I knew the actress's name. I'm going to try to see if I can find her name before
Lisa
we
Ann Walters.
Lisa Ann Walters. And then this season, she has a TA. The actress who is playing her TA, who I first encountered on the last season of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And she had me on Curb Your Enthusiasm. She had me like, who is this hilarious lady that have walked in to this television show? So when they were like, you're about to get a TA, and they showed the little sneak peek of the next episode, and I was like, that's gonna be her TA? Yes! Bring more hilarious people into this situation. Let them interact together. Now, Melissa got a TA that she gotta teach, She can't even get just unadulterated help. She gotta teach her how to be a TA. Woo! Yes, yes. Love to see it. Love to see it. Oh my gosh. I'm gonna find her name before we hang up, y'all, because that girl had me hollering. I don't know. Are you a Curb Your Enthusiasm person, or does Larry David wear you out?
I was not an Office or Curb Your Enthusiasm person. I was a Park and Recreation person.
Okay.
So, you know, the Ben Leslie is the same as like the Gregory, you know, Janine or the Pam Jim, you know, and then I don't know what would be kind of the other equivalent of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Always Sunny is probably a little too dark, but.
Right. I was not a big Seinfeld fan, but I went back to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm and was like, this thing is hilarious. So now Kalundra and I have to have a special group chat, but it's just the two of us, where I'm going to be like, don't even watch the whole show. Just watch this episode so that you can see this girl. Okay. Her name is Kayla Monterosa Mejia. Kayla, I know you listening to the podcast. Sis, you're hilarious. Everything you do makes me laugh. Here for it. Okay, let's also talk about Cheryl, because I feel like I'm this Emmy moment out here. This Emmy moment.
She's our dream girl, and that's just what it is. She's been our dream girl. She remains our dream girl. Like, she walks as our dream girl. On this earth. The thing about Cheryl Lee Ralph is that she's just been doing it for so long, and she's so seasoned and like so who she is.
Yes.
Like, and it comes through in the character Barbara, who is also absurdly funny, but like in a different kind of way.
Yes.
Like, Barbara, how you gonna say you gonna start a garden and can't garden?
Okay. The episode where they had the bit where her character kept confusing who was white and who was black. I thought my stomach was gonna hurt from laughing. So, because the wonderful part about this writing is, I don't know about other people because I'm black, but a lot of the black people I know have at least a family member.
Yes.
Or someone you go to church with. It's like somebody, it's like people who are black have somebody else black they know who always does a thing like this, that like this, some kind of names, they gonna mix it up. And you like, grandma, I don't think that when you saying that person name, like, I don't think that's who you think it is.
My person is my father. My father thinks, like, when he says a person's name, I'm like, and it's the thing, you never correct them, but you know who they're talking about.
Big facts.
Because it's like, you have gotten this person's name wrong. It's not who that is. My father has killed many a celebrity. He swears they're all dead. And I'm just like, that person is still alive. You're thinking about the wrong person.
Please. I mean, it's like my mom at the beginning of the pandemic talking about, you know, I was reading about this website where interracial couples would get on there and they making a lot of money. People just watching them eat food. Am I going to tell my mom that's OnlyFans? I'm not going to tell my mom she's thinking about OnlyFans, that's why they're watching interracial couples eat food. It's not a YouTube.
Is interracial OnlyFans thing a thing? Is that a thing?
Apparently, there are interracial couples that have carved out a niche for themselves on OnlyFans where they are eating food. I don't know if they're eating this food off of each other or just eating food together, but it was like the way my mom was describing it, I knew right away. That this is not a harmless, this is not a family oriented situation that we're doing. But I'm not going to say OnlyFans. I'm not going to say it. We don't want that information out there with our parents. No,
because I definitely don't want them to then explore what it is and then be trying to like pass out anointing oil.
Okay. Okay. Extending their faith. Okay. No. No. Okay. You mentioned another sitcom that you love, and I was very excited that you sent me this. I want to talk about I Love That For You. I need to discuss it. Tell me the vibes, Kalundra.
So, first of all, let me just say, shout out to Jennifer Lewis.
Uh-huh.
Because never, ma'am, will you come off of 7 seasons of a hit TV show on ABC which was Blackish, and then turn around and give to what is to me some of the best acting she's done on television with this ridiculous show on Showtime. I love that for you. Let me just explain to the people, because okay, I feel like I Love That For You is like one of those shows that's like in the back corner of Showtime because like it got overshadowed by Yellowjackets, but like you need to get into this.
Do.
So the premise of this show is that this girl who had juvenile cancer used to watch the Home Shopping Network to make herself feel better. And she, her aspiration in life was to be a host on the Home Shopping Network. Her dream comes true, but it don't come true in the way that you think it is. And that's all I'm going to say to not give away too many spoilers. But this show is absolutely absurd. I hope they, I think they did get renewed.
Yes,
and I hope that they get renewed. They can also drag this out forever for me.
Period.
I'm ready.
Period. Sign me up. Okay, y'all, first of all, y'all need to know that Kalundra and I exchange notes before we do this, these here episodes, because I could literally talk to Kalundra all day, okay? Like, all day long. Like, I could have an 8-hour episode talking to Kalundra, and I, we would break to eat, and that's it, okay? So we have to, like, compare notes. So when I get her notes, I'm like, oh, yes! Because then, like, I know the shows that we both watched. And then there'll be some shows that I'm like, oh, I didn't watch that one. So I can't wait to hear like what Kalundra's going to tell us. Listen, I love that for you. Y'all need to get involved. As soon as I saw Jennifer Lewis, Molly Shannon, and Vanessa Bayer, I was like, oh no, not y'all putting all three of them on the same show. Huh?
Foolishness. Molly Shannon is a nut. And like, I don't know how she walks and exists in life being as ridiculous as she is, because I'm like, this isn't acting. You are this crazy.
Yes.
But the thing is, Molly Shannon in this show is not being as, like, it's wacky, but not in the way we're used to seeing her.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit restrained. Being,
It's like constrained whack job. Mm-hmm. And that's also...
And it's like you're it's like a more of a slow unravel of a character for her, where like you're watching her character unravel slowly. And you're like, oh, because you're already thinking to yourself, with the premise of this show, people who work at a home shopping like network, you're already like, if your career is built on this, that gives us some things to know about you and why this turned out to be your career. But the character that Molly Shannon is playing, watching that thing unravel and get like wilder and wild. Whew. Yes. Yes.
And I don't, shout out to the stylist, whoever's doing wardrobe on that show. Perfection. Every single character has a distinct look. Anybody, Molly Shannon, send me a jacket. I know we're
Listen,
not the same
I love a bold blazer. Kalundra,
I love a bold blazer.
Please match with a different color bold pants. We're not talking about people who are just wearing a monochrome outfit here. These are magenta blazers with orange pants. Like, things are happening in this
and
wardrobe.
And white go-go boots. But somehow it goes together really, really well. Like, they are... And then the chick who is supposed to be like a spoof of a Real Housewife who got a HSN show. I just... I don't even know what's going on with her and the character who I'm going to call Jerry Falwell Jr.
Yes. I thank you for bringing that reference, because it's there's an accuracy. Okay. Yes. Yes. That. Wow. Like, I saw the title and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I was like, oh, they don't mean like in the sense of like what is currently slang to be like, oh, I love that for you. Like, I love that life for you. That. But also with home shopping, I love this faux chinchilla blanket for you as well. Y'all got to check that one out, because that show there, it brought me a lot of joy. And it is very wonderful to see Jennifer Lewis in this like next moment in her career. It is wonderful to see her in that role, honey. Okay.
And she got a concubine.
Okay. The way... Okay, before we move on, I need to speak to this a little bit, Kalundra, because I remember watching the first few episodes of How to Get Away with Murder, for example. And I was like, not Viola getting it like this. Ah! Okay, this is me watching Jennifer Lewis getting it. Jennifer Lewis is getting it on this show, okay? She is getting some things she only referred to. Her character only referred to on Black-ish. Yeah. She is getting it. It is happening on this show.
Right.
I also love that for her.
Listen, I only aspire. Mm-hmm. I can only aspire.
Love that for you, Jennifer Lewis. Love that for you. Okay, let's talk about best drama. You brought up a show that I haven't watched, but my husband watched. Can you discuss the merits of The Watcher?
Okay. So, first of all, before I describe The Watcher, let me just say that I'm so happy Jennifer Coolidge is having her moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jennifer Coolidge is a special brand of human being. And I am just so happy to see her having this like reemergence and getting all of these like really interesting roles.
Yes.
So let's talk about The Watcher. Yes. The Watcher on Netflix, based on a true story.
What?
Yes. Yes.
I don't think based I knew that part. Based on a true story. Okay. Okay.
Based on a true story that happened in New Jersey. And essentially what we have is this family is moving into this beautiful suburban New England home. They move in and the neighborhood and the neighbors are not what they think.
Huh.
There is a quote unquote historical society that is hell bent on making sure that people don't make certain alterations to these homes, which we find out is for very, very terrifying, shady, and unscrupulous reasons.
Wow.
So all I have to say is that dead bodies happen, secret passageways happen, money laundering happens. It's all happening. This me saying these things is not giving away anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but what the core of the show is getting at is the social conditions that people set up trying to like kind of keep up with the Joneses or keep up appearances or have a certain like protected suburban lifestyle and like the cost of that.
Wow.
And it's real, real wild. But then there's also this element of it, Amina, of like, how policing young women's bodies and like their purity is also mission critical to like the preservation of like the white suburban upper middle class nuclear family in a way that's like very slick in there.
Wow.
I don't know. The Watcher is, it's something. And it's a show that I could watch again.
And probably like pick up different things each time you watched it. If I wasn't such a scaredy cat, honey, you might would have got me. But I looked at the trailer for a little while and I was like, nope, that's nightmares for me. That's nightmares for me. Let's talk about a show that we both watched. We have talked a little bit about it, but now we are second season. Best drama for us, P-Valley.
Oh, down in the valley where the girls get naked. Ooh,
I just almost want to write a love letter to this show. I love this show so much. Kalundra, you and I spoke about this because we both were into the first season. We were both so excited to see this show also get renewed for a second season. We are two seasons deep. What were your thoughts about season two of P-Valley, seeing where these characters developed? Tell me the vibes.
So first of all, let me just say shout out to creator Katori Hall.
Big facts. Yes.
I actually, shameless plug, did a profile of Katori Hall for The Bitter Southerner. So
love it.
The Bitter Southerner magazine.
We're going to put it in the show notes. Y'all going to have a link to that article in the show notes. Come on, journalist Kalundra Smith. Yes.
And for those who are in Atlanta, know that you will be able to see The Hot Wing King, which is the play that is kind of a spinoff of P-Valley at the Alliance Theater in 2023.
Come on, Kalundra. Oh, come on and give us the tips and the tea today. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So in 2023, if you were in Atlanta, look for the Hot Wing King, because the Hot Wing King is kind of like a little bit of a spinoff of P-Valley. And it's the play version. Okay. Talking about second season of P-Valley. Katori went places I didn't expect.
Okay.
When you open the season with a makeshift strip club car wash, I'm already...
Listen.
Not ready.
because y'all, some of y'all are not from the South. I know there are strip clubs everywhere, but ain't no strip club that strip club like the strip club in the South. So to have this season open with how are strip clubs in the South surviving the pandemic...
Mm-hmm.
Had me like, wow. Wow. Yes. Continue.
A strip club car wash where you could also get a 10-piece wing dusted with THC. Like, so much there. Let's break it down.
So many layers.
So to then have, you know, I will say the characters that most fascinated me this season were Lil Murda and Miss Mississippi.
Yeah.
Because we see Mississippi, first of all, the episode they gave her, which I think is called Cinderella or something like that. It was like a Cinderella story or something. The episode they gave her that gives us a background of who she is and how she ended up in that abusive relationship was just so well crafted. And then we see her really have to figure out a way out of this situation that like dancing can't get her out of.
Oof.
And I think that's such a pointed moment, is like, the pandemic and the and how it exacerbated situations for people in certain, socioeconomic situations. Like, it's like, yeah, money can't get you out of this necessarily. Like, it's something more to it. And then with Lil Murda, same thing.
Right.
In a situation where it's like, money can't necessarily get you out of this. Flossing, no matter what you do, like, there's some real stuff going on here. The surprise boyfriend, lover, brother, I don't even know. Like, I just...
There was a lot
I was layers. Along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. There was a lot of layers to that plot that, like... I want to give a shout out to Katori and the P-Valley team for giving us these layers of relationships between men and where a relationship can be romantic between men and also have this very protective brother, friend kind of, I mean, the layers of that relationship between Lil Murda and his friend who also then became his security. I'm about to call him Diamond, but that's somebody else. Why am I making up names?
Diamond today? Was the security for the club.
Diamond was security for the club. But what was his name? Thaddeus? Am I making that up? Why can't I remember his name, child? They had a nickname they called him in the show, though. I think his government name was, the character's government name was Thaddeus. But they had a nickname they called him, Lil Murda's friend that he knew from prison, who had then come out of prison. As Lil Murda was going on tour, they were asking him to be security.
You know what? It was Thaddeus. You right.
Okay. Like, the layers of that relationship was just touching. Haunting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the way Katori plays around with the idea of what can be haunting in this show, that is not just the way we think of a horror film or a scary movie. It's also the relationships that are gone away. It's a grief that can be haunting. It's the life we thought we were going to have, and now we don't have that life. I mean, there's just some ways she layered that were just masterful to me.
Oh, yeah. She was trying to be on her Toni Morrison, honestly, with that. And then also, shout out to Patrice Woodbine.
Okay. Running
of Chuckalisa being a pastor on pole. I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, the way she gave those people the sermon and the twerk, honey. I was for a split second, Calandria, and you know I don't be going to church like that, but for a split second, I was like, is that my pastor? Could I have a pastor that do that? I mean, I could kind of be into it. A black woman who's going like, here's a little bit about Jesus. Here's a little twist of my booty cheek. It's just something about those two things that really just came together for me.
On a parade float, mind you. let's give time, place, and manner, okay?
Please. I want to give a special shout out to Gail Bean playing Roulette in this show. Many of you that are Insecure watchers remember her from Insecure as well, right? She was her. She had a character that was dating Lawrence in Insecure. Tasha, I think, may have been her name in Insecure. Gail Bean been acting for a long time, honey. So I'm very excited to see Gail Bean getting her due out here. But this, the way she is playing Roulette on this show, these gum pops that are happening when Roulette is chewing gum and she is just popping gum and telling the people what they need to know. I really am enjoying her character and what her character is finna become. I like it. I like to see it.
And then talk about haunting her. And is it, what's the other girl? Whisper? The witch?
Yes, because it's kind of like they like a devil angel kind of.
Yeah.
But who is the angel? But who is the devil?
Creepy. It's all, they're creepy together, but like in a good way.
I was very like a little bit afraid, but also fascinated. Very fascinated. I'm very excited, y'all, to see that P-Valley was renewed for a third season. What are your thoughts thinking about what could be on this third season, Calundra? We know that the actress playing Autumn Knight is not returning. So I'm just curious about quite a few things, what Katori can do with all of the things that were left undone at the end of season two.
Well, where Katori has me a little puzzled, but I'm excited about it, is I don't know what then becomes the thing that keeps them together.
Huh.
Because she left us in a place where everything is splintering.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. So I think there's a possibility that we have a lot of the same characters, but in a new place or in new circumstances. And so that's exciting because it'll almost feel like the show is starting over in a lot of ways. So we don't get exhausted with the storyline, because there are a lot of things that were left undone that need to be tied up. Like, we don't know what happens to Mississippi. We don't know how Mercedes gonna get out of this situation with the coach and his wife. Good Lord. Her daughter, we don't know how that situation's gonna end up. We don't know how Uncle Clifford and Lil Murda, you know, resolve or fail to resolve. You know, we just, there are so many unknowns, but also the pink is still in jeopardy.
Right, right.
So, I don't know. I don't know. I think the casino opening represents a whole different possibility.
And it's kind of like, it's not reminding me completely of The Wire, but of the fact that as the seasons of The Wire went on, there were all of these layers of corruption, right? That in The Wire, it's like, okay, here we have the corner boys and we see, you know, drugs. Okay, well, now we see the police are also corrupt, but now we see the government is also corrupt, right? So I'm interested to see now that we've got this character who's become the mayor of Chuckalisa, and we have the people who are fighting behind the scenes to see the casino happen. Very curious to see how far up are we about to see this corruption? How far are we about to see what's light and what's dark, and the different ways you can define that as well, you know? It's going to be fascinating, Katori. Give it to the people. Give it to the people, Katori Hall. Okay. I've been waiting to discuss this. We are talking about best new TV series, Calundra. I want The Bear to enter the chat right now because I have been waiting to discuss this with you. You know that a girl is like an amateur foodie in her life. You know a girl is involved in that. So I am always here for a foodie type of show. But The Bear, it just did even more. It was just very sumptuous of a watch for me. Discuss your thoughts about The Bear. Were you surprised by it? Tell me the things.
The Bear to me is stressful. I've never felt such tension and stress watching a show probably since Scandal. Like The Bear, because what they have so brilliantly done is they capture the pace of what it is to work in the kitchen at a fast casual restaurant that's in the middle of a rush. And but also it's a mom and pop type place where there's family drama, there's corruption, they're dealing with the pandemic. How do we survive monetarily? There's splintered family relationships. There's all these things happening, and everybody has something at stake with the survival of this restaurant. And so it just throws you in. That's why it reminded me of theater in so many ways. I've never seen a TV show that literally it drops you in and you feel like you are standing in the kitchen in the middle of this restaurant and you're useless. You don't know, you want to help, but you can't.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You trying to pick up a skillet or chop an onion and there is nothing. And they deal with generational differences.
Yep.
They deal with class differences. They deal with educational differences. And it's so Chicago in
yes,
a lot of ways.
Yes.
And my dad is from Chicago, you know, and so there are parts of it that are so this could only be Chicago
mm-hmm,
for me.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Like, I think you described it so well that feeling in some ways did feel like how a play can feel, because so much of the show is in this tight little space in this kitchen. Whereas in a lot of TV shows that were, you know, about a restaurant, there's all these other places to go. And they really kept you for a lot of the show sort of feeling stuck, as we find some of the characters feeling stuck as well. I was late to the bear on a level, but I was seeing people tweet about it. And I was seeing people tweet about how they dated guys that were like the central character. And I couldn't tell if that was complimentary or
yeah.
if that was like, this ain't the type of man. They were like, I have dated this kind of chef bro and this ain't what you want. So I was like watching them, you know, and I was like, let me go check out this show. Then I want to shout out the character Sydney, being played by Ayo Edebiri. If there was going to be a spinoff, let it follow her, because these braids, this skin, everything.
Yeah, her character totally, I didn't see her coming. I did not see her coming. Didn't.
No. Very unexpected. It was like unexpected to see her character. Unexpected what world her character is coming from into the world of this sort of mom and pop show. And for those of you that have not checked out The Bear, I mean, tell me if I get this right, Kalundra, because sometimes I'll be embellishing. Okay, but basically to me, The Bear is about a restaurant that was owned by a brother who, when he died, he left the restaurant to his younger brother.
Right.
But there was tension in that leaving because of how the brother died. And there was also tension because the little brother was never really welcomed in the restaurant at when the brother was alive. So it's a big surprise that the brother would leave the restaurant to him. But herein, the little brother has become a bit of a somebody in the food world. He is out here with the aioli. He is of the aioli and not of the mayo. Y'all know the vibes if you're a foodie person, okay? He is a person who is talking about the aioli, not the mayo. His brother got a Chicago, it's like Chicago's down home food kind of restaurant. So to see this younger brother coming home, but kind of unwillingly coming home because he has to under some sad circumstances, and now meeting up against the people who have been there holding down the restaurant all along and all that ensues from there. I mean, it was a fascinating watch.
It's a mess. And, you know, as much as Carmi, the brother,
the central character, right,
is a questionable character, I will say that if I was in that situation, the brother trying to bake the chocolate cake in the back would have sent me over the edge.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm.
We serve Italian beef. What are you doing?
What you doing making tulle? We don't need chocolate tulle here. We need braised beef, my guy. Period.
He would have sent me over the edge.
Good night. Although Marcus's little tender heart, you know, and Marcus and Sydney's characters, the little, you know, I don't know what they're trying to give us for season two, but you know,
there's a there.
You know, they had a couple moments that I was like, what's going on here between y'all? What else is cooking?
No, I like what else is cooking. Mm-hmm. I like how you did that.
What else is cooking? We want to know. Okay, talk to me about our next television show from Issa Rae. We have to discuss Rap Shit.
You know, if Instagram was a TV show, that's what Issa Rae gave us.
I'm trying to see, is this a compliment, Calandra? Do we like it? What are the vibes?
Well, but that's the thing about the show. It's like, I think Issa is simultaneously like celebrating an element of Black culture and also completely satirizing it and like poking fun of it because she is using Miami and like this kind of like hustle to get on as like a way of showing how people spend more time trying to like hustle and get around a thing than actually becoming and doing the thing. But also like, it's just ridiculous. Like Shauna as a protagonist is an absurd idea because you got this girl in her early 30s who like is a super woke SoundCloud rapper with 5 followers.
Who certainly sounds like she did spoken word at one time. Like that was immediately absolutely the vibes I felt. Like, oh, this is a slam poet. I got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Queen of the open mic. Mm-hmm. And like she teams up with basically a Young Miami type. Played very brilliantly by Chameleon. And they decide they're going to get on and become this rap duo. But like, it really, they're having to then question along the way how much of themselves they're willing to give up, how much of themselves they're willing to compromise to make it. And like, what are they even aiming for to begin with? It's very, very, it's smart, which we expect from Issa. But also I think in a lot of ways, it's like a takedown of Instagram culture.
Huh. Now see, Calandra, you done brought a point out right there. You done brought a point out because I didn't even think about that. But yes, Calandra. And another thing I felt this a little bit watching Insecure, that I knew that the generation of Black women that Issa was writing about wasn't my generation. But I loved getting that, like, I feel like I'm sort of the tail end of Gen X, right? And so I loved watching Insecure and thinking, oh, these were similar things that maybe my girlfriends and I were talking about when that was our phase of life. But then also being like, oh, these things we weren't talking about because that wasn't a thing we experienced, because that is the difference, you know, in the generation. I felt even more separation watching Rap Shit. Immediately felt like some things is going on here that I just know nothing about. Let me watch and find out. And this is a show that is loosely based on the story of the City Girls, like the hip hop group, the City Girls, right? So I was just fascinated. I'm fascinated watching Rap Shit, like, wow, okay, that's how those lyrics got like that.
Seduce and
girl, Seduce. That shit is a hit. Okay, as soon as they did, I around the house will hit it sometimes. Seduce and scheme. Please, we don't know where the M is on the end. It's lost. We don't know. It's seduce and scheme. That's it. I don't know where the M is at. Y'all ask your mama where the M is at. We don't know. Okay. Yes.
There are some good one-liners too in that show. Like when she's on her little like Instagram or TikTok videos and she's like, "Well, you a 5-star bitch, you make them pay for every star." I was like, this is such a hot mess. Who wrote this?
Not me watching like, that's right, girl. Every
that's right,
star.
Girl.
Every star, honey.
Every star.
Okay. My last category, we have to talk about this because you and I both love a good old docuseries, honey.
Yes.
I need you to speak to me about Victoria's Secret, Angel and Demons docuseries.
So, you know, as I call them, I love a scamumentary.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Calundra, bring it back to the people.
And there's no greater scam than capitalism. And so...
we wish it wasn't true. Secret. We wish she was telling a lie, but it's the truth.
Victoria's Secret, Angels and Demons. If you don't watch not but one scamumentary this
the one.
Year,
this is
it's top tier. It might have, if I'm thinking about the rankings from last year, it may almost edge out Little Rich. Almost for me.
I can feel it though. I can feel you. Uh-huh.
Because the let me just tell you my own personal experience with this. So if you haven't seen Victoria's Secret, Angels and Demons, it is about Lex Wexler, who is the man who acquired Victoria's Secret. He's the man who is at the top of Limited Brands. Mm-hmm. Limited Brands is Victoria's Secret, Bath and Body Works, and it was Henri Bendel. So what happens in this show is we see how the Victoria's Secret fashion shows and the photo shoots and that brand almost became like a cover up for sexual assault and sexual harassment.
Right, right.
With what was happening with the models on these sets and how all of these different millionaires and billionaires I won't say any names, are like involved in this.
But it's some well-known names on the list there.
Mm-hmm. Some well-known names on the list. It's some very Epstein adjacent stuff happening. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what's so wild about this, Amina, is what you may not know about me is that there was a period of time where I worked for Bath and Body Works.
My.
And I will tell you that when you work for Bath and, when I worked for Bath and Body Works, this was about 10 years ago, the narrative about who Victoria was and the narrative about how this small town couple started this lingerie shop for all women and then it got discovered and it made Victoria this wealthy woman and isn't this so amazing? They told us that story.
Wow.
Like it's in the onboarding. Wow. Nah. They don't tell you that like, none of this is true.
Wow.
It's all lies. There is no Victoria.
Mm-mm. She ain't even a secret.
That's the secret.
That's the secret that there ain't no Victoria.
Like, it's ingrained in the way they did the employee onboarding. So as I'm watching this unfold, I'm like, hold up now.
Okay.
We're thinking we're working for a small business that got acquired by a large corporation that has then expanded to become a global brand. When in fact, it's all just made up.
Wow.
It's a brand narrative gone haywire.
That's it. That's it. And that's all. Mm. I mean, I have really enjoyed these brand takedowns, these brand takedown documentaries. I want to give a special shout out as well to White Hot, The Rise and Fall of Abercrombie and Fitch, because you can't watch the Victoria's Secret documentary without also sort of placing it in this historical context of what was happening in the era. What were the messages that women were being given, that women of different cultures and size, and like there's all these layers there that you then place the messages of Victoria's Secret into there. I mean, we are currently watching Victoria's Secret, honestly, try to play catch up, running behind Savage Fenty and Rihanna now, because Savage Fenty was one of the first brands to really push for that kind of true inclusion, right? So to see this takedown of Abercrombie and Fitch, a store that I passed by in the mall all the time growing up, and was like, I hope those white people enjoy that store. I hope they have a good time in there. But that just seemed like a place I should not go in.
Now, I never went in Abercrombie and Fitch. Like, it's so interesting that you mentioned that, because even as a kid, as a teenager, it was like I would pass by it and that strong, horrible cologne would fall out. And it was, but I always knew I wasn't welcome.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't for me.
Yep.
So interesting.
That message was very strong. So yes, shout out to these docuseries. Oh my gosh, Kalendra, I could talk to you forever and ever. Oh, thank you so much, Kalendra, for coming on and sharing your thoughts with the people. I know that you are doing a lot of amazing things. Tell the people, where can they find you? What's next for Kalendra? What are you out here giving the people in the arts right now?
Thank you so much for having me. This is always so much fun. And they can find me. I'm Kalendra Smith, K-E-L-U-N-D-R-A, last name Smith. I'm the only one out there. If you find it, it's me. If you find somebody else, it's a lie. So they can find me at Kalendra.com on my website. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm not leaving. I must witness the fall of Twitter in real time, because somebody must document it. On LinkedIn.
That's right.
And all those things. And you can see, if you look at my website and look at my social, you'll see me post about articles that I have coming out, as well as when my plays will have readings and shows. I've got some things that are going on that I can't talk about right now. But if you go to my website, you'll be able to see when I announce it.
Yes. Y'all make sure y'all go to the socials, follow Kalendra there, and we will make sure we link to some articles as well so that people can click on those in the show notes, honey. Kalendra, thank you so much. You're the best.
Thank you.
Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.